primary purpose of this is to support the industry that we have in Southern Southeast.
Newly introduced legislation would double the region's state forest. And if a groundhog can't bring an early spring to Alaskans, maybe a marmot can. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Tara Bicknell. Those stories and more up next. Skagway and Yukon teams are on their way back home after their yearly winter visit to an international carving competition in Colorado's Rocky Mountains. It's carving of a different sort, though, taking place in downtown Breckenridge with hand tools and not on the slopes with bindings.
I'm going to come up to Pete, and he's scraping away at snow.
Team Alaska, made mostly of Skagway residents and neighbors, Team Yukon, were two of the few groups invited to contend in the International Snow Sculpture Championships. Skagway, with three past awards to its name, had a lot to live up to.
You know, it was interesting. There were 15 teams from 9 different nations and some amazing sculpture. So to be right there neck and neck with them is pretty cool.
The local team was not named first. Despite scoring a feature in Parade magazine last month, they didn't get second, third, or Kids' Choice, or even People's Choice, which they've won twice before. But that's not exactly the point, says team member Bruce Schindler.
We had a lot of fun. We didn't win anything this time. We're all a little disappointed by that, I mean, honestly. But we did have a great time. We produced a really nice piece, and people dug it.
They did, however, almost get the People's Choice Award. They came just 30 votes shy out of 3,600 votes, but at least they lost their title to their mentors, who also happened to be neighbors.
We were beat out by the UConn team. You know, darn UConn team. Another great day. They're the ones who got us started in the first place, and they had a really, really sweet piece. They had the Northern Lights in a circle, and they were kind of like spirits in a circle, and within the circle on the inside was a raven on top of a skull. And so it was a pretty powerful piece. But it's not just the piece itself, it's the finish work that they did and the detail work that they did that really just made it pop and took it over the top. They really are masters at finding their form quickly and then spending a lot of time on getting the detail down.
The Yukon team discovered the members of Team Alaska at the Buckwheat Ski Classic aid station years ago, and that's how it all began.
You know, and of course, having a lot of fun at the aid station, making these big sculptural type things, and they said, hey, why don't you come up and carve in our event up in Whitehorse for the Air Canada Invitational? And so we did, and they showed us the ropes and showed us the tools, and they've mentored us the entire way. And because of them, we're now competing in the Budweiser International Championships and doing really well. This is the first year we haven't come home with a prize. So the team's done that. Pete Lucchetti just got back from performing in China, taking second place in China out of 20-some-odd teams, which is a pretty powerful finish. And also in Switzerland, they placed, I think it was second as well.
The competition that just ended in Colorado started small about 2 decades ago, and Skagway's been part of the event for the past 3 years. It draws spectators from all over the world who come to walk through the garden of snowy statues. Among those wanderers this year were a little boy and his dad, who stopped to admire Skagway's creation, a giant white book with creatures from Jack London's stories crawling out of it.
Probably the most succinct thing that we got that's super pleasing for all of us was when a father and son came up, and he said, hey, see that wolf right there? When we get home, I'm going to read you the story about that wolf. And, of course, he was talking about White Fang and Jack London. And that's pretty cool. And the kid got excited about it, so they're going to go home and read a story. And to entice a father to open up a book for his kid, that's pretty cool.
The team says they appreciated the visiting school kids above all, since they seemed to understand the process of carving snow better than adults.
You tell them, well, the first thing we did was we drew a lot of pictures. And, of course, they could understand that. I said, after we drew a lot of pictures, we find the one that we like, and then we start, you know, molding clay to fit the pictures. And, of course, they can understand that, too. And I said, then we got the clay the way we want it. Then we start building the block of snow around that. And the cool thing was the kids can really see what can come of just drawing pictures. And especially, you know, kids in junior high who have just read Jack London, and it's cool when you get those kids, they say, oh yeah, I just read To Build a Fire. And they're like, whoa, that's cool. And when a 15-year-old kid says your stuff's cool, then you know, you got to be all right, I guess.
The big challenge this year was beating the heat and working through the night with 3 hours of sleep. When you're working with snow, 40 degrees at sunrise sets a stressful deadline.
We didn't finish things as well as I would have liked, and as far as the rest of the block, just because of time constraints and also because of battling the sun. So I think those are the two main things. But basically, figuratively, we pulled the piece off. I mean, it was a great narrative piece, and all the elements were there and pretty much true to our form.
The team will next compete in snow sculpting at the Air Canada Invitational in Whitehorse.
There's a lot less pressure than there used to be. You just do what you can, and whatever else falls by the side.
Governor Sean Parnell wants to double the size of the state forest in southern southeast Alaska. He recently introduced legislation with the goal of increasing the amount of timber available for harvest. Some are concerned that could damage fish or wildlife habitat. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
The Southeast Alaska State Forest was established last year with about 20 parcels totaling about 25,000 acres. The land was spread throughout the southern part of the region. House Bill 105 and Senate Bill 44 would add another 23 parcels totaling another 23,000 acres. They include five areas that were part of a controversial University of Alaska lands bill that was thrown out by the courts. The 23 parcels are on Mitkoff, Wrangell, Prince of Wales, Dahl, and some other islands, as well as the mainland. They're already in state hands.
These are lands that are identified already in area plans as lands that have a primary management intent of forestry.
State Forester Chris Mache says some of the acreage holds mature forest, which is ready to cut. Other parcels are regrowing after being logged. Designating the land as state forest allows for long-range planning.
We can start making investment in the young growth resources, which means we'll start doing pre-commercial thinning, which will increase the amount of volume we can harvest from these lands in the future. And then when we do build roads and bridges to access the lands, we'll build them to a higher order so that we can use the infrastructure again at some point in the future.
Some of the land is near existing state forest parcels, while other acreage is in new areas. The governor's cover letter for the bill says the state forest lands will continue to be open for hunting, fishing, and recreation, but the goal is to increase the amount of timber that can be cut.
The primary purpose of this is to support the industry that we have in southern southeast, particularly on Prince of Wales Island and other small mills that are scattered around southeast Alaska.
Some of the trees will be sold and exported in the round, as has been the case in the past. Mache says the state lets those buying the timber get the best value for their logs. State forest lands are also open to mining, but Mache says he's not aware of any significant mineral deposits on any of the parcels. The 23,000-acre addition to the Southeast State Forest is a small amount of timber. Logjam on Prince of Wales Island, one of the few active national forest timber sales, contains more than twice that amount, though not all is being logged now. Still, the industry is happy with the legislation. Owen Graham of the Alaska Forest Association says every bit helps.
I do think they'll have some increase in the short term, but the bigger impact will be down the road and allow the state to better manage these lands because they'll be more willing to invest in pre-commercial thinning and other land management practices.
The region's largest environmental organization is concerned the bill would damage wildlife habitat. Rod Cadmus of the Southeast Alaska Conservation Council says it includes some old-growth timber, such as a parcel near Hook Arm on Dahl Island, off southwest Prince of Wales. He's also concerned some of the trees will be sold overseas in the round rather than milled in Alaska.
That's exporting not only jobs out of the region, but exporting fish and wildlife habitat. And so any way that can be changed so that these sales and the southern southeast forest is structured to benefit local communities and local jobs, the more that can be done, the better.
The Forest Association's Graham says he doesn't have a problem with shipping out whole logs.
We support round log exports as well as domestic processing. You know, the state exports fish and oil and minerals, and some of our timber gets exported, but a lot of it gets manufactured into lumber as well.
All sides agree the second growth areas need attention. CX Cadmus says that helps the economy, too.
On a regional scale, there's a recognition that things like forest restoration, thinning, salmon restoration in streams, those things can be used to provide jobs for local communities.
The Southeast State Forest Expansion Bill includes provisions to allow the recently formed Wrangell Borough to select lands. Both the House and Senate versions have been referred to only two committees, Resources and Finance, which could help speed their progress. This is Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau.
On Wednesday, thousands of Americans down below will practice the early February tradition of peeping into a dwelling of a groundhog to find out if it'll soon be spring. Meanwhile, Alaskans are relying on another creature to rescue us from cabin fever. A bill signed last year by Governor Sarah Palin makes February 2nd Marmot Day in Alaska. The bill was introduced by a Wasilla Republican senator who said it made sense for the marmot to become Alaska's version of famous groundhog Punxsutawney Phil, because groundhogs aren't common here. There are a lot of people twiddling their thumbs these days in the Lynn Canal who might forego dreams of an early spring and instead petition the marmot to grant us, what was that stuff called again? Oh yeah, snow. But the creators of the bill must have appreciated the impossibility of predicting Alaska weather and did not give the marmot any forecasting duties. Instead, it's an initiative to create more educational school activities about the marmot, which, as it turns out, is in the same family as the groundhog. For KHNS, I'm Tara Bicknell.